12. Atadishat Prayanaya Bhagavan Devaki Sutta Vrityan Daruka Jaitradi Anugyapya Gurun Vibhu Atadishat Prayanaya Atadishat Prayanaya Bhagavan Devaki Sutta Bhagavan Devaki Sutta Vrijyan Daruka Jaitradi Vrijyan Daruka Jaitradi Anugyapya Gurun Vibhu Anugyapya Gurun Vibhu
Anugyapya Gurun Vibhu
Atadishat Prayanaya
Atadishat Prayanaya
Bhagavan Devaki Sutta Vrijyan Daruka Jaitradi Anugyapya Gurun Vibhu
Anugyapya Gurun Vibhu
for living.
Bhagavan,
Bhagavan,
the Supreme Lord,
Devaki Sutta,
the son of Devaki,
Vrijyan,
his servants,
Daruka Jaitra Adin, headed by Daruka and Jaitra, Anugyapya,
taking permission,
Gurun,
Guru,
from his superiors,
Vibhu,
the Almighty One.
Almighty.
Translation. The Almighty Personality of Godhead, the son of Devaki, begged his superiors for permission to live. Then he ordered his servants, headed by Daruka and Jaitra, to prepare for departure. Purport. The superiors mentioned here are personalities such as Vasudeva, Lord Krishna's father. Atadishat Prayanaya, Bhagavan Devaki Sutta, Vrijyan Daruka Jaitradin, Anugyapya Gurun Vibhu. Translation again. The Almighty Personality of Godhead, the son of Devaki, begged his superiors for permission to live. Then he ordered his servants, headed by Dharuka and Jaita, to prepare for departure. Amma gyanam timrandasya gananjana salakaya yaksumilitam yena tasmai shri garuve namaha namo om vishnu padaya krishna prasavitale shrimati bhakti vidanta swami niti namne namaste sarasati devi gauravani pacharine nivishesa sunyavadi vasacha deshatharine. What am I supposed to say? throughout this first part of this chapter, actually beginning from the previous chapter, last few verses, how Krishna is showing his an example of proper behavior. Not only just proper behavior, and also proper respect. Even though he was king, or even though he was a supreme personality of Godhead, in fact. Even as a king, when he presented with a certain dilemma, he asked proper advice from Uddhava. And Uddhava gave a solution which was pleasing both to satisfy Maharaj Yudhisthira and the kings and demigods that will come to the Rajasuya sacrifice of Sri Krishna, and also pleasing to the Yadavas who were in the middle of making plans to attack Jarasandha. And now, when this decision was made, and Krishna was going to leave for Indraprastha, the capital city of Maharaj Yudhisthira, he first took permission from his superiors to leave. We see also in the Ramayana how when Ramchandra was banned to the forest for 12 years, before he left, he came to the assembly and took permission from his father. Took permission from his father, then his mother and stepmothers. He took permission from all of them before he left. This is culture. Sometimes you wonder, Prabhupada said, this Krishna conscious movement is going to conquer the world by culture. So what is that culture? Is it just by philosophy? But it's culture encompasses so many things. Now prasadam is culture. That's a very nice culture. But it's just this prasadam. It's how you prepare the prasadam. How you serve the prasadam. That's culture. When the guests come, how you serve them. First of all, you prepare nice prasadam with love and devotion, offer to Krishna. And how you serve that prasadam to the guests, that's proper culture. In fact, in the Vedic culture, if an enemy comes to your home, you receive them so well that they do not even feel that they are in the home of the enemy. Such culture is there. I always remember when Bhakti Chandra Maharaj came to Sweden many years back. I think it was in the 80s. He came to the farm and he cooked. Bhakti Chandra Maharaj loved to cook. And he loved to cook and serve the devotees. So he was cooking and for his godbrothers. And he not only just cooking, but he was also serving prasadam to them. And the devotee was there, told me how he was engaging everyone in such soft topics and created a such nice, peaceful environment that he was able to get his godbrother to just keep eating and eating and eating while himself was just eating just a little bit. And he was just feeding everyone. And other devotees were also telling me the same thing, how he was just... And so I always had this desire that when do I get the opportunity to someday taste the prasadam that Maharaj cooked. And I had the opportunity a few years ago when he visited Malaysia. And I offered... In the previous visit, I wanted to take him for massage. but he didn't have time. So that time when he came again, I asked, and he was not sure. Then I said, Maharaj, instead of taking so much time going to for massage, why don't I give you a massage? They said, okay, that's better. So he was staying in an apartment just opposite the temple. So I went there and gave him a massage. After massage, he took a shower and he went to the kitchen and cooked. And I was in the kitchen with him, watching him cook. And it's really a lesson. Seeing him is just so wonderful to observe. He was very, very peaceful. Very gentle. I mean, you know Bhakti Charamara, he's a very gentle personality. So everything he do is just like, very gentle, no passion at all, no hurry, nothing. The disciple prepared all the ingredients, he just went in, just put the spices, and hardly any spices, very simple spices, cook, short time, bam, few dishes prepared. I was just watching this. And they asked, Chiranjeev Prabhu, why don't you take prasadam with me? Oh, my desire fulfilled. So I sat down, I had prasadam with him, and it was one of the most wonderful prasadam I ever tasted. Nothing spicy, nothing, just very simple spicing, but so delicious. And he was just engaged in small talk, just very simple. And then you just feel so nice. Such wonderful culture. Just prasadam, just surrounding prasadam. So, and Vedic culture is just based on respect. Respect for the elders. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's also explained. Offer proper respect to the father, the mother, the teacher, the elders. That's austerity for the mind. So Krishna is showing an example here, how he's showing respect to the elders. They first take permission. Even before leaving, he take permission to leave. Then he left. So it's all, culture means proper behavior. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita is explained, sometimes preachers, they may be very good at preaching, but they do not exercise proper behavior. Some may be behaving properly, but they do not preach. But if a preacher who behave properly and at the same time preach, that's a very wonderful and powerful combination. So it is such so wonderful that we have this opportunity to actually hear and learn all these things. Otherwise, how would we know? Now, even most of you may be coming from India, you have the background, but still we can observe how it's so much, so fast declining. So fast this culture is lost. I always point out when I take prasadam, when I see any of Indian boy eat with two hands, I always point it out to them. Isn't it when you are small, I'm sure, learn it from your parents or mother, eat with the right hand, one hand. But somehow along the way, it's lost. And I always tell them the story of my own personal experience. When I was in Mayapur, that's quite a number of years ago, I was having prasadam with a friend from Orissa, from Brahmin family. And he had his nephew with him. Or cousin or nephew. Young boy, just maybe in his late teens. Not really, a devotee as such. But he was visiting Mayapur. Of course he's a devotee. He visited Mayapur. So I was taking prasadam. I was doing great. I was eating with one hand. And we were chatting and eating. Then I finished my prasadam. Then came the banana. How do you open banana? So I used two hands to peel the banana. And immediately this boy turned over to his uncle, say something. Then uncle came over to me and said, my nephew said, why are you eating with two hands? They notice. You see, someone who has a bit of cultural background, they will notice all these things. And we may claim, I'm a Brahmana. I remember in the early days, devotees come to India, they have this special ISKCON Brahmin track. Normally Brahmin is a bit thin, but they have ISKCON Brahmin track, that means thick and long, sticking out. And say, Brahma. And then, because they are very new, quite new devotees, new to India and all that, they behave in a not very Brahmanical way. So that was very good. So it's more than just wearing a Brahmin trait. After all, maybe the inflation is not 2 paisa anymore, maybe because of cost of a couple of rupees or something, but still it's a couple of rupees, track. Just a track. How much does it cost? So it is the culture that we represent that people are going to see. They may say, oh, wonderful philosophy. But then they'll look, how are the devotees behaving? Are they proper representative of this philosophy? Are they acting according to their preaching? That is why Prabhupada is so potent. Not only was he speaking eloquently and wonderful philosophy, but his activities were also top. His behavior also top. You cannot find any faults in Prabhupada's behavior. That's why people, when you come, people falling at his feet and worshipping him, touching his feet. One time actually he was in a Pandav program. Everyone was trying to touch Prabhupada's feet. And then Prabhupada said, "So do you know why they're coming forward to touch my feet? Because I'm free from sex desire." Then they know it. That's why they offer respect. So this is Acharya. Acharya, he lived his life, is teached by his example. And one very important example is proper behavior. You have the many years ago, Charu Maharaj, he gave a seminar in Vrindavan, in the VIHC, Vrindavan Institute of Higher Education. That was the first time they had this kind of seminar. And he did a seminar on Vaishnava etiquette. In fact, the books are printed. You've seen this book. It's important to learn those etiquettes properly. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, it's proper behavior. Vaishnava behavior, Vaishnava etiquette, this is the crown jewel of the Vaishnava. It's not so much just, I'm very philosophical, I'm very learned, but it's how we behave. How we, present ourselves, how we behave, how we have proper Vaishnava etiquette, how we interact with others. That is what people see. And this is what people are attracted to. This is a wonderful thing about this Krishna consciousness movement. This is the great benediction that Prabhupada brought to us. And having said that, just a couple of days ago, I was listening to a lecture by Tamal Krishna Maharaj that he gave in Auckland. That was the time when he was still pursuing his PhD studies in Cambridge. So he was saying how he was in the GBC meeting, and he took the opportunity to seek the association of his advanced god brothers. And because time was limited, he specifically picked out 2 god brothers. That was Bhakti Tita Maharaj and Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. And he's explained that he was seeking these 2 god brothers out specifically because here he is going to a university, a sannyasi. So he has to interact, and you know how it's like in the university. And those 2 devotees have a lot of experience interacting with the material world. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj do a lot of preaching to the alternative groups. And Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, he himself was a PhD. He did his PhD when he was a devotee. Prabhupada encouraged him to finish his PhD. So in his discussion with Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, different things came out. And one of the things that Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj said was that we have a great task at hand. The mission that Srila Prabhupada has left behind is a very, very great task. And Maharaj went on to say that, and we are not qualified to fulfill that great task. We don't have the ability to fulfill that great task. is so great. His task is so great. I mean, imagine. Srila Prabhupada said that someday in the future, historians will record this period as a time when this Krishna consciousness movement saved the world in its worst period. They'll record down how this Krishna conscious movement saved the world. So you just think about it. It is a huge, huge, huge task. And the more you think about it, the more scared you become. How am I qualified to fulfill this task that Prabhupada has left behind? Such a great task. Then Bhaktivedanta Maharaj said, but Krishna will have to do something. He will have to shower his mercy and he will have to empower us to do it. So there are two things in one. One is the humility to understand the task at hand is too great for us. And the second part is the confidence that Krishna will intervene. Krishna, he will empower us. He will just take up this task. This is the quality of devotee. He has full confidence in the mercy of Krishna. He's fully dependent on the mercy of Krishna. He has no doubt whatsoever. When he's given a task, he has no doubt, oh, can he be done, cannot be done. When he just endeavors to do it, Krishna just shows his mercy and it's get done. I'll just give you an example. Right here in this room, it's Arvind. He was in the class on Friday. I was talking a little bit about book distribution. And after the class, I talked to him. What about you? Aren't you going to distribute some books? He got so fired up, he was supposed to go to school. He got so fired up, he went to the bank and he asked who? Rajanari. And he got a few books. Some small books, some bigger books, and a big cookbook. So what are you going to do? He said, aren't you supposed to go to school? He said, I have a little time before I go to school. And he went away. I said, who are you going to distribute to? He said, there's some guests here. And he went. And he just approached the guest. Now just think about it. Just a small boy. How old are you?
Eight
years old. Does he have great qualifications to distribute books? Has he been trained in salesmanship? If you look at the material qualification, it's not there. What is the material qualification to distribute books? But he heard and he got inspired. And the desire arises in his heart, I want to do this. And there was no question in his mind that it's not going to be done. I want to do it. And he went and he distributed a few books. On the way to school, a friend called up his mother and he said, who is that? Oh, his friend. He said, pass me the phone. He said, pass me the phone. And he took the phone and he said, and he sold books. So his mother's friend. In this way, he sold all the books. So you see, this is actually exactly what Bhaktivedanta Maharaj said. The task is too great. I mean, you look at it. If I give you a bundle of books, what's going to go through your mind? What am I going to do with these books? How am I going to sell them? All kinds of doubts are coming. How am I going to do it? But he has no doubts whatsoever. He says, I'm going to just sell these books. And he's done. It's Krishna. Krishna is reciprocating with the desire and endeavor of his devotees. Therefore, he can earn. So that it is a fact. The task at hand is great. It's very, very great. But because we just take it up, Krishna has to empower us. Because there's no one else doing it. Krishna wants it to be done, but there's no one else doing it. Imagine your Guru Maharaj comes and he wants something. And usually it's the servant or the intimate disciples who are always surrounding him. And you feel yourself, I'm just a small servant, small disciple. But there was no one else. Everyone is out somewhere, and you're the only one there. Are you going to just stand there and say, "Oh, Guru Maharaj, I'm not qualified to serve you"? No. Maybe you want a massage or whatever. I don't know how to massage. No? You go, "Yes, Guru Maharaj, I can massage. Yes, yes." And you go and you try. I remember the first time I cooked for my Guru Maharaj, he was visiting us on the Sankirtan party. We were traveling Sankirtan. So after the prong, I have never cooked before in my life. But some devotee just told me, you just cook some rice and cauliflower. I didn't even know, I just cut away all the chunk and left only the flour. It's cauliflower, so I just only the flour. So obviously it was not much left of the cauliflower. And it was just salt and pepper. Some butter, salt and pepper I cooked. And I served. And somehow he liked it. Maybe he was hungry, I don't know. But he ate it up. And he asked for more. And I thought, well, what am I going to do? There's no more, and I have to cut more and cook. So I didn't have great qualification to cook. I never cooked before in my life. Just someone told me, just put salt and pepper, some butter, and cook. Don't you know how to cut the vegetable? But he ate it, and he asked for more. But if I was going to stand there and get all mental, I don't know, I don't know, I never cooked before, blah, 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 blah. No? So actually, we find ourselves in a very, very fortunate position. There's no one else doing it. There's no one else performing this great task. In fact, when Srila Prabhupada took up this mission of his Guru Maharaj to try to preach in India, he was approaching his god brothers, who were very learned. They were all very learned. And he was trying to approach to make some Indian disciples. But they were not responding. Not responding. And Prabhupada has to go to the west to seek out the Mlechas and the Yavanas. Those people are not even considered part of the Vedic culture. Even lower than the Sudras. Sudras, at least, they're part of the Vedic culture. They're not even part of the Vedic culture. They're addicted to all kinds of sinful activities. So Prabhupada has to seek them out. And what did Prabhupada do? How did he go to the West? Alone. Age of 69. Just when he was on the boat, he turned 70. And we left. It was quite a pathetic scene when he left. There was hardly anyone to send him off. Just a few well-wishers. I think his son was there. One of his sons was there. And he was sent off on the boat. He was embarking on the greatest mission this world has ever seen. The greatest mission. To start a movement that's going to be recorded in history. Just to save the world. And there was no send-off. Imagine if we are embarking on a big mission, how pompous the celebration would be. They would line up, you know. Like sometimes, you know, and bam, and all these drums and trumpet, boom, boom, and all this. A lot of big arrangement to send them off, even before they accomplish it. After just a few well-wishers, and it was off on the boat. And not just in a passenger boat, it was on a cargo boat. And he had two heart attacks. Anyone here had a heart attack before? No idea what it means, heart attack. Normally when you have heart attack, there's some family members around, friends around, you rush off to the hospital, and then doctors and nurses taking care of you, pampering you. People come and visit you in the hospital and buy fruits and flowers and all kinds of stuff and write you cards, "Please get well" and all that. You get completely pampered. Prabhupada was in his cabin. There was nobody, no relative, no friends. Not just one heart attack, two heart attacks. All alone. And normally, People have heart attack, never the same again. They say, oh, I have heart attack, I have to slow down. But Prabhupada, after the two heart attack, he speed up. He speed up. And Krishna appeared to him on the boat with all his incarnation, assuring him that don't worry, we are here with you. Don't worry. And the next day the sea calmed down. There was a very plain sailing. And Prabhupada was writing in his journal. You have all seen this book produced by the BBP, the Jaladutta. It's just in Prabhupada's handwriting, his journal. Every day he was writing at least one line. What his thoughts, he was writing his thoughts. And he was also thinking. When he arrived in America, he looked around. He said this time, he wrote the poem. He was also quite overwhelmed by the task at hand, so great. He said, I don't know why you brought me here. These people here, they are all addicted to sinful activities. How are they going to hear and appreciate the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? But if you want, you can make me dance. Therefore, please make me dance, make me dance. So again, it's the same mood Bhaktivedanta Maharaj is saying. Was overwhelmed by the task at hand, at the same time confident that of Krishna's mercy. And by his mercy, it can be done. So this is what Prabhupada brought to us. How much austerity, what he went through to bring this most valuable gem of Vedic culture. The other day I was in Crossway, I was speaking to a few friends, there was this one also, he comes to the program regularly, Indian boy. He's related to the Sri Sampradaya, and he's promoting one of their guru who's coming here, who's already here actually. So he was all saying about the Vedas, and we are not studying the Vedas, and on, you know. But insinuating a bit that not qualified. Sometimes you get that from Indians, especially when one boy who's with the RSS, famous RSS in India, the youth movement of the Vishnu Hindu Parishad, right? They can be quite militant and very nationalistic. So he was also trying to tell me how that all you Eastern devotees, Western devotees, you should go to India and get trained up. But what we are seeing is that Indians have to come out of India and coming to Australia and get trained up. That's what we are seeing. And then he's telling us that we should send to India to get trained up. Don't make sense, isn't it? And then he was trying to tell me that, you know, because the Western devotees are not qualified, therefore you are not taught how to chant Vishnu Sahasrara. Therefore you give them only the Hare Krishna mantra, very simple mantra to chant. And you all become, by chanting this mantra, become more qualified, then you can learn the what is this other mantra, not Vishnu Sahasrara, but they chant that mantra in sacrifice. So I say, where is he saying? What I've learned, I say, is from the Shastra that this is the mantra. This is it, the Hare Krishna mantra. This is the mantra for deliverance. In fact, in the Upanishad, it's mentioned the 16 syllables of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And there's no other way, there's no other way, there's no other way. Chant the holy name, chant the holy name, chant the holy name. That's Shastra. But there's so many speculations. Then he came up with the best one. In all my 30 years, I've never heard that one before. I've heard a lot of things, but not this one before. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna saying that one should fight for his country. I said, wow, that's a new one. Often I've heard people say, work, you know, just perform your duty. That's the most common one. I said, fight for your country. I said, where is this stated in Bhagavad Gita? Please show me. He could not show me. Because So there are so many speculations going on, so many misunderstandings. They find people, they buy Bhagavad Gita, they cannot understand Bhagavad Gita. Until they read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, so then everything becomes so crystal clear. And this is what Prabhupada brought to us. How much endeavor he put into it. What he has to go through. What he has to go through. Struggling and learning. Doing all his translation work. Not getting any support. Single-handedly started the movement, a worldwide movement, with the help of a few dropouts and hippies. Anyway, not very qualified people by any standard, just hippies. Preaching to people who had rejected their own culture and just high on drugs. They're all just attached to sex and drugs. And Prabhupada found himself in the middle of it. He tried to encourage his god brothers to assist. None of them responded. Nobody responded. Maybe, okay, they sent a pair of katas. And a few clothing and items, and that's about it. But later, when Prabhupada became successful, everyone wants to be affiliated with Prabhupada. There's this one book. That's what Mataji compiled. Interview is about Prabhupada previously, before he went to the West, interviewing different god brothers and different personalities that know him. And everyone, almost all of them, were saying that, yeah, I was very close with Prabhupada. I was very, we were very intimate friends, as I say. Certainly, everyone wants to be part of the photo ops, you know. Oh, man. But when Prabhupada was asking, nobody was there. Alone. In New York City, how scary it is. When you first came to Australia as a student, wasn't it a bit scary? I mean, some of you may have relatives here, but I mean, those of you who have no relatives here, who just came, and as you arrive, it begins to sink in. Oh, I'm alone in a foreign city. But you have financial backing, right? You have family backing, you have financial backing. You have an institution to go to, a university institution. In that institution, they are all student help. Help you settle down, help you find accommodation, give you all kinds of information. But Prabhupada, when he arrived, there was just one person that was sent there to show him how to take a bus from Boston to Butler, Pennsylvania. And we arrived there, there was this couple who has reluctantly agreed to sponsor Prabhupada because of the insistence of his father in India. And he was thinking that, anyway, my father always trying to get me to sponsor this other, but none of them came. So he thought, here's another one, all right, sign the sponsorship, nobody gonna come. And then right, the next thing he knows was Prabhupada standing in front of his door. What are you going to do with this Swami in the house? Recently they had a gathering in Butler, Pennsylvania, and in that community hall where Prabhupada gave his first lecture, and this couple was speaking. They are not really his devotees as such, but they have so much appreciation for Prabhupada. And he was telling so many stories of what Prabhupada was doing when speaking. So imagine, and Prabhupada alone, and he has to stay in his house, meet eaters, put his food in the refrigerator with all meat and everything. And then he went to New York alone. He said, but it's a small town, let me go to New York. And he was staying, practically depending on the Mayavadi, Dr. Mishra. And he has to tolerate that. And all Dr. Mishra around him is to do kirtan, because his kirtan was very attractive, people like it. And when after he spoke, but then after he realized, he said, better you don't speak, you just give kirtan. Creating too much problem for me. And then he has his own flat. His translation of Bhagavad Gita was stolen, someone broke into the flat. Second time. First time in India, his manuscript disappeared. Second time in New York, manuscript disappear? Who would have continued to do it? Who would have continued to do a third translation? Some of us, most of us would say, oh, it's Krishna's mercy, he doesn't want me to do it. Very, very quickly we come to that conclusion, it's Krishna's mercy. When we don't want to do something, it's Krishna's mercy. Prabhupada was determined, he was very clear on what he wants. And he came the third time he did it. And that's how he started. And he had to stay in the loft, in the house of this crazy guy who was taking so much drug, going went crazy, chased Prabhupada out of the house. And Prabhupada was amongst all these other derelicts around there. I'm also like one of them, homeless. I'm homeless. And all aristocratic gentlemen. Prabhupada come from a very aristocratic family. Always been taken care of as a kid by his mother and father. In and up there, homeless, in one of the worst areas in the world. Maybe beside Calcutta slums. It's a Bowery. Bowery is like one of the worst places you can find in New York. So much labor he put into it to start this Krishna conscious movement, to bring this most valuable gem of Krishna consciousness to us. And the least we can do is to try to disrupt it. The least we can do is try to share this with others. And it is tough. The toughest opposition you'll find to try to distribute this gift to others, especially in the form of Srila Prabhupada's books, is our own mind. The obstacle is not the weather. Obstacle is not going out. Yes? Sometimes the weather is nice, sometimes the weather not nice, sometimes too hot, sometimes raining. It don't snow here, so we don't have that problem. You don't get too cold here either, so it's not a problem. Sometimes the body is aching. Sometimes we meet people that are not too pleasant. Sometimes we meet people who are pleasant, who are very nice. You meet all kinds of different situations. But the greatest obstacle of all is the mind. The mind telling us, you cannot do it. Who do you think you are? Going out and distribute this transcendental message. You are just a fallen soul. Just stay home and take prasadam and get purified. The mind is expert, just telling us so many things. Just not to go out. It's just Maya. And don't go. Because if you go, then my grip on this material world becomes loosener. My grip on this condition so will become loosened. It's just like, in another way, like the gopis talking to one another. He said, my dear friend, please do not go to the Yamuna River. Because if you go there, you'll see this Shyamasunda in threefold bending form, playing on his flute. And when you see this beautiful form, you lose all attraction to your family, to love, friendship, society, everything. And similarly, Maya is telling you, don't do it. Don't go. It's too difficult. You have so many responsibilities. You have to take care of this, you have to take care of that. You don't have time. Your body is aching. Devotional service is very long term. You have to take care of the body. And we ask, we take care of the body for what? For what are we taking care of the body? So we can take care of the body. We take care of the body so the body can take care of the body. So what's the use of taking care of the body if you're not using it for Krishna service? Prabhupada said, let me die on the battlefield. And he did. Right up to the last moment, he was still translating, giving commentaries to Srimad Bhagavatam, 13th chapter of the 10th canto. Prabhupada never stopped. Even when he was so fragile, he said, I have to go to the West. They took him to London. Can you imagine the difficulty staying there, traveling in that condition, the skin and bones, every movement is hurting. He went.
such a strong desire to share Krishna consciousness with the world, to strengthen the faith of the devotees, that is giving himself up. This is the ultimate love, the ultimate prema. In the Shastra it stated, of all the devotees of Krishna, the gopis were the greatest devotees, servants of Krishna. And what is the quality of the gopis' devotional service? Of course they have love, so much love for Krishna. But one of the greatest qualities of their love of Krishna is manifest in their selflessness. And the topmost selflessness is manifested in Srimati Radharani. Srimati Rani was so selfless that one time she was with Krishna. And then Krishna said, actually, I would like to have the association of Chandravali. There are two opposing group of gopis, left wing, right wing. Radharani said, I want the association of Chandravali. The Srimati Radharani said, I'll go and get her. He didn't think, anyway, in a normal relationship, what would happen? What? How can you say such a thing? Pick up my shoes and you know, and get into a whole big scene. But she said, not only did she didn't get a scene, she said, I'll go and get her. If you want, again. So much selfless love. Only thought in the mind, what will give Krishna's pleasure? That's the most important. Selfless. So when we are out preaching, be selfless. Like sometimes some people in India are saying, oh, you are not devotee, you're too passionate. Running out, doing so many activities, preaching, running here, running there. You should be just absorbed in your rasa. Absorbing, finding out what you're in the gopis with the Krishna, absorb in the finding out what is the swarup, what is the eternal relationship with Krishna. But Prabhupada never told us that. Prabhupada never revealed who he was in the spiritual world. Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur never revealed that. But what they did is that they devised program. They understand fully well the nature of Kali Yuga, especially Kali Yuga in the present time. They devised a program in such a way, especially emphasizing on preaching, and within that preaching, all the esoteric understanding of Krishna consciousness can be found. When we absorb ourselves in preaching movement, all this esoteric understanding of Krishna gradually manifests itself. This is a wonderful way in which the Bhaktisiddhanta and Srila Prabhupada engineered this Krishna conscious program for us. He created a program which is just perfectly suited to the people of this present time. Because generally we are passionate. They are so passionate. So much energy. What are we going to do if our program is just chant 64 rounds a day, perform austerity, eat once a day, follow Chaturmasya 4 months, just eat from the ground with no hand, just eating, put on the ground, no salt, just eat once a day? How many people do you think will become attracted to this Krishna consciousness movement? How many people will become attracted to take up this process of Krishna consciousness? You scare them away. But although we are not doing all these austerities, performing Sankirtan is the greatest austerity because it's selfless love. We are practicing the art of selfless love and developing selfless love because it's not for me. I'm going on preaching. I'm doing it for the benefit of others. How more selfless can it be? I would rather sit at home on my couch. I would rather play with my kids. I would rather associate with my husband or my wife. And 101 things I would rather do. But I'm accepting all these inconveniences. I'm accepting all these austerities. I'm accepting this constant bickering of the mind. Non-stop. And I'm going out to do this to try to do some, create some benefit for others. The Sai Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called this Paropakara, the greatest welfare work. Greatest welfare work. And it's all. We pray. Who prays for mercy every day when you see him come from the deities? Isn't it? When you come from in front of the deities, what do you pray? Most of the time we pray, please give me your mercy. Please give me your blessing. Isn't it? Who do that? Who pray for mercy? Who don't need mercy? Nobody. Good. So everyone wants mercy. And as Sri Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj pointed out, this is a task that is beyond us. So in order for us to do it, Krishna has to empower us. Krishna has to shower us with his mercy more than anything else, because it's so urgently needed to be done. There's no one else to do it, and it's urgently needed. So we are taking it up and empower. We cannot just wait to become qualified. That's why it's so amazing to see, so wonderful to see, even new devotees, they're coming. Immediately they're catching on to this most esoteric understanding of Krishna consciousness, is to preach and share Krishna consciousness with others. Srimata Radharani also is always pushing the gopis towards Krishna. Say, please accept their service. They can give you more pleasure than I do. The gopis are always arranging for Radharani to be with Krishna. It's the nature of the spiritual world. Everyone is always arranging, directing the living entity towards Krishna. So when we are preaching, we are also connecting, Krishna, please accept this servant of yours. Reconnecting that back to Krishna. And it's increasing the pleasure of Krishna. So how much mercy? We are not qualified, that's for sure. But because we sincerely try to perform this service for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna, Krishna empower the devotees. He empowers them. And therefore, we are able to accomplish things that is completely beyond our abilities. Completely beyond our ability. You see, after so many years in the movement, I still shake my head often. And what is it that I am able to sit here and give classes on philosophy and giving classes to audiences who are university graduates from a whole high position society, very learned people. I just finished high school, never been to university. What is it? All this is just beyond my normal abilities, but somehow by Krishna's mercy a layman can cross mountain. A dumb man can recite poetry. This is the wonderful nature of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. So it's there for grabs. It's up for grabs. It's there for everyone. And we have this wonderful opportunity this time of the year of the marathon to dive in. Dive in, take a swim, splash around in the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. It's a hot summer, isn't it? You enjoy it when you jump into the ocean, and people, when you jump into the ocean, people just splash around. When it's hot summer, and but when you go to the beach, you don't just you jump in. So here's this time, jump in, dive in, splash around in the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is so easily available for anyone who wants it, for everyone to take. It's just there for the taking. How much do you want? How much mercy do you want? Now it's a question that we have to ask ourselves. I've been asking for mercy Every day I'm praying for service. Please engage me in your service. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. How much do I want? That's the question we have to ask ourselves. How much do I want? How eager am I to accept, to receive the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? How eager? How much mercy do I want? This is the price to get Krishna. In the Quran it is stated that Krishna cannot be purchased by performing pious activities even for hundreds and hundreds of years. But if you find that this commodity of Krishna Bhakti is available in the marketplace, you should immediately go there and pay whatever price that has been asked. You just have to have it. And that price is eagerness. Laoyam. In the songs by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Laoyam Lala Shamayi. We have to have this laoyam. Normally our laoyam is for material things. But we should transform that laoyam to Krishna. I want Krishna. I want the mercy of Krishna. I want to develop Krishna consciousness, develop Krishna prema. I want. This is the only bona fide I want. Normally, I want to become my children. I want this, I want that, I want so many things. But I want Krishna. So we ask ourselves this question, how much do we want Krishna? How much do we want the mercy of Krishna? As much as we want, it's available. There's no lacking. We don't have to fight with anyone. No, he took too much, so I'll get less. It's enough for everyone. It's unlimited. Krishna is unlimited, and his mercy is also unlimited. I used to have a Sankirtan, a private disciple. He eats. Sometimes on Sunday, he will be taking so much prasadam. Sometimes I'll come and try to serve him. Instead of saying no, he will say, Krishna is unlimited. His prasad is also unlimited. But unfortunately, my stomach is limited. I can only take so much. That's his way of saying no more. So it's unlimited mercy out there. We just have to reach out and grab it. And this is a very good opportunity for us to utilize, to grab this mercy. So, thank you very much. And any questions or comments? Yes. Well, in the Sankirtan movement, so many things need to be done. We cannot limit ourselves. There are front lines, but they also backup needs to be done. Just like in an army, not everyone has to just go out on the street, in the battlefield. You need logistic support, supplies, intelligence, so many things. But it's all part of the war effort. So, in wartime, there will be casualties. Right? So if we find ourselves not able to physically go out, then we should find a way, how can I be useful to those who are going out? You think, for example, when Harinamananda went out and did his 900 plus Mahabodh in one day, he had one assistant. Don't you think it was useful? He was performing a very useful service for the book distribution. He saved Harinamananda so much time by helping him piling up the books. Without him, he probably wouldn't be able to do so much. So that was a great assistant, and he gave benefit from that. And if we have the spirit in our heart, our mind to do it, we'll always find an opportunity.
Or if you have been on sanctum for a number of years and your body breaks down, whatever, you know how it's like. You can also try to inspire others. In fact, actually, it's a greater service. One person, you can do so much. But if you are able to inspire others to do, through others, you can do so much more. So in this way, our consciousness is always connected with the Sankirtan consciousness. You don't lose it. You don't lose it, even though you physically not able to bow. Did I answer again?
If you look at the distribution, where can we go? Like usually when we go outside, there are some places where there is a restriction of the technical terms and something. So like for example, some market, like near station, there's very so many veggie shops and so many people are buying there. Is it okay to go and sit there, or there's some?
Well, you have to find out each place is different. Sometimes you're not allowed to go into this place. We don't go in there to disturb. We just find some spots where we allow, and we don't disturb the shop people. You ask the temple authority, or you ask those who are going out regularly, they will know. But the point is that we don't have to only go to places that are busy. Anywhere there's a human, people with two legs, they can be busy. Anything that moves with the shoulder facing the sky, they can approach. Remember this story I told not too long ago? There was I was on Sankirtan with one devotee, and we were having a lunch break. So we were sitting in the park taking prasadam, and next to us was a drunkard. He was completely blacked out. So after prasadam, the devotee thought, I just chant a couple of rounds and I go out. What he did when he was chanting his two rounds, he was just circumambulating this drunkard. He was just going around and chanting. Then at one point the drunkard woke up. I said, what are you doing? And the devotee said, oh, I got a book here, you want? He said, how much? He paid for the book and fresh out again. So now you will not think that such a person would take a book. Right? But you never know. There was another time, remember, I flew up to the North Pole in Norway to visit the Sankirtan devotees. Then we drove down, and we took a ferry to one island, really small island. I think the island, maybe the place we went to, maybe there's just a few hundred people who live there, and there were already four distributors, and then plus me, five. When we arrived there, once we got there, there was no ferry leaving until the early afternoon. So we are stuck there. There was just a hotel with a restaurant, and then a post office or something. That was it. Or maybe a small convenience store. And that was it. When we arrived there, we thought, what are we going to do here in the next 4 hours? With five of us here in this tiny little village. No shops. Where to find people? And even if the people living there are all spread out all over the place. But Krishna has a plan. There was a wedding on that particular day. The whole town practically came out to that square, to that restaurant for the lunch or whatever. So, and they were doing these big books, Chaitanya Charitamrita, they distribute. I was sitting in the car chanting and reading. I was watching them distribute. Then one of the devotees came, he said, are you not going out? I said, you kidding? You're only four of you out there. We saw few people. I said, no worry, there are plenty of people. And I went out. And people were walking around, hey! Oh, I already got a book, I take one more! I said, he paid, I take one more. People were buying books from all different devotees. And even though there was so few, I remember in one hour I did 15 of those big charitamrita. And it was just mind-blowing. And it was somehow we came there, Krishna arranged, there was a wedding. So it's not only busy people, there are busy places. You find people everywhere.
again, this back to God has never been. There was one person, he was sitting in this car park, so many cars, and he was sitting, he was so frustrated in his life, he had filled the car with the gas, like, you know, very deadly thing, because he didn't want to leave, he wanted to kill himself. So at that time, you know, devotee came to sell the books and said, go away, why are you selling this? I don't want anything, go away. He said, no, please just take this. Then he said, no, go away, I told you to go away. Go away from here. Then, okay, devotee just was going around there. And then this man, he got out, and when he wasn't there, he put this book on this, you know, the
viper's
side. Then he came back and he sat and he said, I told him not to. Then the devotee thought that this is the time he really needs this book. Then he came back and he opened that book and he started. He thought that even if I told him no, still he put it. Witness is why he is so intent on giving. Then when he started to read, that there was a card of the temple that was among them. Started to read and he started to make so much sense of him. He came to temple and he came
to save his life.
Yeah. And another story of thief, he came to house to steal. So after he was trying to search so many things in the house and there was one bag, and finally when he was taking that, thinking that there was something in that bag, he was going, and at that time the people arrived and he quickly ran outside and he wanted to save himself, he ran. And then he opened the bag, what is it, there was never be time. Then he thought, oh, after all this challenges and all these things, you know, trying to save myself, let me see, I should now start reading Gita, and he started to read Gita and completely turned his life to transform.
That was exactly what happened to, what's the name of this devotee, the first book distributors in our Vaishnava tradition. On the order of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, they were transporting these books from Vrindavan to Bengal. What's the name of this? Srinivasacharya, Ramachandra, right? Narottam. So he was transporting these books, and then some bandits. There was a king actually. He actually has a group of bandits that plunder travelers. So it was a bad king. So these bandits stole all the books. And then when the devotees realized that, they were really distraught. Said, no, this Goswami Vrindavan put so much effort in translating these books, and all the devotees in Bengal are waiting for this book, and now we have lost them. Oh, this is what's going to happen. And so let's go to the king and complain to the king. This time you make a police report. They go to the king. In the meantime, when they brought these trunks in to the king opened it. Books! Books! Oh, what have I done now? These are not just ordinary books. These are religious books. Now all my karma is suddenly coming down on me. All this plundering and all that. Now we have to go back and find out who those sadhus are. Bring them, I have to beg for their forgiveness. And then this Srinivasacharya came and asked, he said, we are traveling and we lost these books. So you are the owner of this book. He fall in the street. Please forgive me. And he became a disciple of Srinivasacharya. The whole kingdom became Krishna conscious. So the thief, the king was a thief. He stole the books. So these books are really wonderful. No matter how you come into contact with it, you get purified. You get hooked. That's why we have to pick up this mission and just go out and just as much as possible let people come in touch with these books. Day and night we just be dreaming, thinking books, and more books. And eating, we're thinking books. Let's go to sleep and thinking books. You're working and thinking books. You wake up first thing and thinking books. Become madman. Transcendental madman. This man of America. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Prabhupada transcendental book distribution ki jai.